You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. So what if I told you there's a two-bedroom condo for sale in South Pasadena? The listing price? $75,000. You'd probably go check that out, right?
Benjamin.
Hey, Sean.
How are you?
I'm well. Good morning.
Especially when similar places are selling for close to $700,000. This particular building is owned by the California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, the state agency that manages your freeways. Turns out Caltrans owns a lot of properties in the area, more than 450 houses, apartments, and vacant lots between Alhambra and Pasadena. And Caltrans bought them decades ago as part of a plan to extend the 710 freeway. Christopher Sutton is an attorney in Pasadena who's represented tenants in Caltrans-owned homes.
Starting in the 1960s, when Caltrans had unlimited power and unlimited funds, they just started buying up properties. Their autopilot, their bureaucratic inertia, means we just buy, we buy, we buy, we buy, we tear down, we build freeways.
Yeah, but they're not building freeways here. The 710 was supposed to connect two other freeways, the 10 and the 210. But the appetite for tearing down neighborhoods ran out before that freeway got built. Meanwhile, Caltrans has held on and rented those properties out. And now, after years of lawsuits and legislation, the 710 extension plan is officially done, kaput, thanks to a bill signed by Governor Gavin Newsom this year. And many of the folks living in those Caltrans homes, such as the people in this 12-unit apartment building, may get to buy them at 1960s prices, as in what Caltrans first paid, plus inflation, or maybe even less. It would be a windfall for tenants in hundreds of homes. But how much will they have to pay, and how much longer will they have to wait? KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb went to find out.
Sean Abajan and his wife live in this 12-unit building where the 710 freeway is not. They want to buy their apartment from Caltrans, an apartment they've lived in for almost a decade.
Welcome to our home.
He's showing me around.
So we have a small two-bedroom apartment here in South Pasadena.
They live upstairs, Unit K, in a space that's embraced by bookshelves. There's an oud proudly on display. It's a guitar-like instrument from the Middle East.
To our right is the bathroom.
It's small and comfy. And there's also no way that Abajan and his wife could buy this place on the open market.
You know, at this point, I mean, I'm 45 years old, and, you know, that's not exactly the American dream to buy a small apartment by the time you're 45. But like many in our generation, we have a lot of money in student debt that's really become like a mortgage for us. And so homeownership has been elusive for us.
Do you see this as your only option unless things change?
Yes, pretty much.
So they've teamed up with their fellow tenants in a nonprofit to buy the place from Caltrans. And they can get a great deal because of a state law that requires Caltrans to offer the homes to the current occupants at, quote, an affordable price. In some cases, that means tenants could pay what Caltrans paid for these properties in the 1960s and 70s, plus inflation. For example, a house bought in 1970 for $25,000 would now go for about $165,000. Still, a large chunk of money, but well below market value. The equity would be held by a state fund with rules about when you can sell the place and how much you can get for it. That's what Caltrans wants. But attorney Christopher Sutton says not everyone who's living in these homes can afford that. He recently took Caltrans to court and won a judgment that allowed three longtime tenants to buy their homes at what Caltrans bought them for, as in $25,000. And Sutton says he's got more cases like that in the pipeline.
So it is definitely an anomaly that Caltrans is the owner of this inventory.
Charles Loveman runs the nonprofit Heritage Housing Partners, which is teamed up with the tenants at this apartment building.
We were asked by the city of South Pasadena at the beginning of this year to help them figure out what the Caltrans rules were as it applied to the inventory of Caltrans houses in South Pasadena.
He sees a real opportunity, a marriage between the Caltrans tenants and cities like South Pasadena to create more affordable housing.
think about it, how long it takes to build a new unit in Southern California, how expensive it is to build a new unit in Southern California versus looking at, you know, getting hold of purchasing this inventory of existing buildings, fixing them up, and then turning them into affordable housing in a 12-month time frame instead of a 3-, 4-, 5-year time frame. So this is a way for South Pass to meet its affordable housing obligations and get units on the street much quicker than if it was new construction.
And that would help Marcela Guzman. She's one of the tenants here.
I'm a survivor of military sexual trauma. Through that process, I had a lot of instability with my mental health. And I eventually, in 2007, blurry years, I became homeless. I was living in my car.
It's a big reason why Guzman wants to buy her apartment.
I'm a kid from South Central LA where the riots happened. The fact that I can walk in the streets and feel safe with my service dog is amazing. You know, I've never had this type of safety before in my life.
And it's not just apartment buildings. A lot of the properties that Caltrans owns here are single-family homes.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing, Ben?
Good, man.
Good to see you.
Can I come in? Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Come on in.
Mike Hannibal has rented his house in South Pasadena from Caltrans since 1980.
So this is it. Tell me what we're looking at.
It's the front room. It's small, but, you know, it's just me, so...
It's a charming two-bedroom, one-bath, blue and white colored cottage. Outside, there's also a garage and a little backyard.
You know, I was walking by in the bathroom here, and I can hear something out the window.
Yeah, that's the Pasadena Freeway.
So that's the freeway right there?
That's the freeway anyways, yeah. It's all day long.
Hannibal's house sits right above the 110. A drone of cars, trucks, and motorcycles can be heard at all hours of the day. Still, Hannibal says he'd love to buy the place. He grew up here, worked for the fire department here, and buying another house in this community is out of reach for him. The median price of a South Pasadena home sits just above $1.2 million, according to the real estate website Zillow. That's an 8% jump in the last 12 months.
Well, it's a city that I like. I mean, it's a great city, and... the house itself, it would need some work. If it was my house, I would, put money into it and, you know, do it nice. But it's really the city. I mean, it's an expensive city to live in, and it's really my only opportunity to buy in this city.
Hannibal says he's had a positive experience renting from Caltrans, not something shared by every tenant, and that his rent remains comfortable. But the path to buying, he says, has been murky at best. Even before Governor Gavin Newsom signed this year's bill into law, effectively ending the 710 extension for good, Caltrans laid out a plan to sell the homes in phases. Currently, the State Transportation Agency says it's in phase one, but it sold fewer than a dozen of the 42 homes that are in this grouping, according to its own records. Hundreds are supposed to be sold by next year's end, and critics say that's impossible. Again, here's attorney Christopher Sutton.
I think Caltrans is unable to staff the process. I think they just do not have the staff capacity to process that. So if they're selling 9 properties a year, it's going to take them approximately 50 years to sell the properties. And so that the staff allocations are such that the tenants are going to be waiting another half a century.
Hannibal admits he just doesn't know when he's going to have a chance to buy his home.
My home was out in phase one, so I'm assuming it's phase two because of the requirements.
In the meantime, about a third of the apartments and homes that Caltrans owns along the 710 corridor are sitting vacant as the area suffers through an intense shortage of housing. Critics say Caltrans wants these homes vacant so it can sell them for more money. Caltrans declined a sit-down interview with KCRW, nor would it answer questions about how it wants to sell its properties and at what price, citing pending litigation. But it did respond to some questions submitted in writing. Matt Rocco is a spokesperson for Caltrans. He says the department is not renting these vacant units because, well, it's preparing to sell them soon.
The properties were intended for the 710 extension, and we do not plan on keeping the properties. Caltrans will continue to offer multiple opportunities to allow tenants to stay in place as owners or as renters under new ownership.
Back in her apartment, Marcela Guzman says she's aware of the challenges ahead and the fact that she might not be able to buy her little unit.
We've been doing this for 3 years. We've been talking to Caltrans, but I think the biggest thing is that it's now in Caltrans' hands. Caltrans can make this happen. They can say yes or no.
She reminds me that she knows what it's like to be homeless and that a roof over your head isn't to be taken for granted. In South Pasadena, for KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, that 710 freeway expansion was supposed to be a seamless corridor through the San Gabriel Valley, but preservationists pushed against the project for decades. And as Benjamin reported, Caltrans eventually killed it. Well, to give us a history of the decades of fighting and turmoil that once was the 710 expansion project, Brian Taylor is a professor of urban planning and director of the Institute of Transportation Studies over at UCLA. Professor, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
What happened to the 710? Why was the project killed last year?
Well, the 710 isn't so different from many other freeway projects in LA that were killed. What we have now, the network that's out there, is about half of what was originally planned for freeways in Southern California. So the Pacific Coast Freeway, the Beverly Hills Freeway, the Marina Freeway, which we just have a stub of, these are all projects that were eventually killed with pushback from neighborhoods or opponents of one sort or another. The 710 is a little unusual because much of the project was completed. But the folks in Pasadena have opposed it for many years and eventually got support from other surrounding communities and were able to push back on it long enough that the project was eventually killed.
I mean, when you look at the freeway network in LA, and yeah, there are some, dare I say, bald spots, right, where freeways could have been built or maybe would have made the surface streets maybe a little more tolerable. I don't know, or maybe worse. Who knows? But I mean, I wonder, what was it? How did those things get finished? And yet freeways like the 710, or as you mentioned, the Beverly Hills Freeway, how did those not get finished or even onto construction in the first place?
Well, a lot of the projects were through essentially vacant land. I mean, LA wasn't fully developed when these were started in the 1950s. And so a lot of the land purchase was less controversial. I grew up in Long Beach, just about a quarter of a mile with what was to become the 405 freeway. And it was a blank spot of right-of-way when I was a young kid, and I gradually saw the project built. In other areas, there had to be displacement. So the Harbor Freeway, what we call the Harbor Freeway now, went through and displaced a lot of African-American homes and businesses when it was put into place with some considerable controversy. The one big freeway that was eventually built late in the game was the Century Freeway from LAX to Norwalk. And that was an enormously controversial project in which Caltrans, for a time, was one of the largest housing developers in Southern California to deal with all of the displacement that occurred there. So as you moved into projects where you had to do more and more displacement, the popularity of the new projects waned considerably. And the dilemma we have is that as we built fewer and fewer of the projects that were to be the planned network, we ended up making the freeways that were built larger and larger and more massive projects that were more disruptive to the surrounding communities. So what was originally planned back starting in the 1930s and into the early 1950s would have been a denser network of roadways, but they all were planned to be much smaller. So in other words, you could distribute the vehicles over smaller, less invasive facilities. But as more and more lines came off the map, the engineers tried to design more and more capacity into what remained, and we ended up with these massive facilities that are truly disruptive to those who live around them.
Well, let's talk about the older style development, because a lot of these homes that Benjamin was reporting on just a moment ago that would have been torn down to make way for the 710 expansion, they had to be sold, or that Caltrans bought them. So where do we go from here when you've got, you know, all these people who were supposed to be displaced and all of a sudden, you know, the freeway never gets built?
Well, now they have a strip of land that they can think about what to do and how to redevelop it. I would say that one of the unusual pieces of land in a metropolitan area is what we'd call a right-of-way. And we have some old streetcar rights-of-way that eventually we used, for example, the Expo Line and some of the other projects that had been rail right-of-way for many years that had gone dormant. In this case, there have been plans for decades to build a freeway through here and gradual purchase of the homes. But now that the project's not going forward, it does present an opportunity to engage in development in an already built-up area. You typically aren't given that opportunity.
I mean, for as long as this project had been on the table, and we're talking about decades, like you've got people who have been working at Caltrans who have seen this from the inception, right? From its inception to its death.
Yes, when I've been at UCLA for a while now, and I brought my students on a field trip to Caltrans. And one of the things that we met and talked about was at the time in the 1990s, the continuing ongoing controversy of the north part of the 710 project. And while we were there, it was the last day for one of the Caltrans engineers who had spent essentially his entire career working on this project, different things to try and get the project built. And he spoke to the students, said, well, it was good that we finally have worked out an agreement with the cities, and I think that we're going to go forward, so I can retire knowing that my you know, my career was well spent, that we eventually got a project that was mitigated to the satisfaction of the local governments, and that we'll fix this gap in the network. Of course, that that did not come about, and here we are 2.5 decades after that.
Do you think when things like this happen, it's good or bad for greater LA? I mean, we think of, for example, the Beverly Hills Freeway. This was supposed to be the 2 that would have taken you all the way to the west side from, say, Echo Park, which is where the right. 2 ends right now.
Yes.
You look at the surface streets in the middle of this, you know, of the grid that is, the giant grid that is Los Angeles, and there's that big space where there is no freeway, but there are a lot of surface streets, and it takes a long time to get through that area. Would that have made things better, or do you think it would have just, people would have congregated to the freeways, and it would have been worse?
Well, that's both a sort of factual question and a normative one. Los Angeles has emerged from being a large but largely sprawling metropolis to one of the most densely developed in the country. And in that process of becoming a major economic and cultural center, you have huge agglomerations of activities that are vibrant and generate enormous income, but are very difficult to serve with everyone driving in a car. So we could build more freeways, and that certainly would make it easier to get around. But the larger nut to crack, which is how not to have chronic congestion, probably doesn't lie in building more of these kinds of highways.
Brian Taylor, professor of urban planning and director of the Institute of Transportation Studies over at UCLA. Professor, thanks for your time.
Sure, I appreciate it.
Well, just ahead, just to show you what a big issue it really is, a new survey shows that Angelenos are more concerned about homelessness than they are about traffic. We're going to dig into a new poll coming up. It's Greater LA on KCRW. Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. With nearly 60,000 people homeless across LA County, it is an issue that continues to be top of mind for a lot of people. In fact, a new poll commissioned by the LA Times and the Los Angeles Business Council Institute found that 95% of those surveyed, 95%, in other words, almost everyone, identified homelessness as a serious or very serious problem. Traffic congestion came in second at 88%. Housing affordability came in third at 85%. Staff writer Benjamin Oreskes looked at those numbers for the LA Times, and he's with us right now on the line. Hi, Benjamin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. Was anyone surprised by these results?
I think when you do polling, and I've worked on some polls in the past, you rarely get everyone agreeing on anything. And to see a number like that, and then to put it in the context of old polls from the mid-aughts that the LA Times did in mayoral races, and they'd ask about what's the next priority for the mayor, you'd see crime, you'd see education, you'd see traffic. But homelessness would rank in the single digits. And a number that I'd want to spotlight for you is that a third of people either said they have known someone or have experienced homelessness themselves. And that number jumps with the African-American population to nearly a half. So it's not just some issue for most people that's like off in the distance. It's something that they are feeling or know someone who is feeling.
Why do you think people polled think many, so many of their fellow Angelenos are homeless, though? Do people have theories on the cause?
Yeah, you know, so in the poll, we asked in different ways about what they thought was the cause. And, you know, we saw sometimes contradicting answers. So in one question, we heard from Angelenos that homelessness is primarily a result of lack of affordable housing and wages. About half said that. But in another, we sort of saw that it was about a lack of mental health services and sort of alcohol abuse or drug abuse services. So in the poll, we also sort of see Angelenos kind of trying to get their head around this vexing issue. So it's hard to say exactly what people think, but we did see kind of in certain parts of it one thing and in other parts another thing.
There are a lot of theories about causes, obviously, but what are the answers, the solutions? And I know city and county voters approved tax measures that will pay for more housing and services with Measure H and Measure Triple H. Did the responses, Benjamin, to the poll indicate that maybe the empathy is waning, that people aren't quite as sympathetic to the homeless situation as they once were?
Yeah, I mean, I think that number stood out to us. A significant majority of the population sort of has felt that the money from the county and the city has been ineffective. But also, there was not a lot of appetite, as much as people felt bad for homeless people who they saw on the street. There was a broad consensus that it shouldn't be legal to sleep on the streets, and a frustration that this has gone on the way that it has.
It shouldn't be legal for people to sleep. Let's dive into that for a minute, mm-hmm. because I know that one of the questions of this poll was, do people have the right to sleep on the street? You know, I guess, what does the city say to something like that?
Yeah, I think that it was one of the questions that really jumped out at me as well. I mean, the context here is that the Ninth Circuit, one of the highest courts in the land, has issued this ruling, the Boise v. Martin decision, that has basically said cities cannot prohibit people from sleeping in public spaces unless they have enough shelter or housing for those people. It's kind of been a paradigm shift in how cities and counties like LA have enforced anti-camping ordinances. We sort of asked a question that was trying to get at the thrust of that decision. And what it was is we asked, as long as there's not enough housing or shelters, homeless Angelenos have a right to live on sidewalks and keep their property with them, even if it makes it inconvenient for local store owners. 60% of respondents disagreed with that statement. And what's hard about that, or hard to understand from a policy perspective, is what do you do with these people who are on the street because we don't have enough housing? We spoke with the mayor, Mayor Eric Garcetti, and the mayor sort of made a little news and making it clear that he doesn't believe that there is an inherent right to sleep on the street. But at the same time, he is attempting to also say that, you know, we shouldn't make it hard for people who have nowhere to go. But from the respondents that we heard from, there was more of an appetite for law enforcement to be more involved in cleaning up our streets in order to address the health crisis that is mounting on the streets. So I think that we saw that people are kind of straining, looking for who can be the answer to this crisis. You know, the advocates I spoke with want to make clear to voters and their neighbors that the police tend to have not a positive interaction with homeless people. They end up interacting with the criminal and justice system, which only furthers their spell in homelessness and complicates their efforts to get out of it. So I think that both the city, the government authorities are trying to offer the most sort of benevolent, friendly face to this. But in the reality of it is a lot of these interactions that happen with the authorities can have a detrimental effect on a person's ability to get out of homelessness.
Benjamin Oreskes, staff writer for the LA Times. Ben, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So, what are your thoughts on the issue of homelessness? Is LA doing enough? What are the answers? We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. We invite you to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. You can come along on our journey across greater LA and Southern California. You can tell your smart speaker to play KCRW and, of course, leave your thoughts there. kcrw.com/greaterLA. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, parking is a commodity everywhere, at home, at work, on the 10. And buildings have reflected automobile storage for decades. But is that changing in greater LA? That's tomorrow. Next on KCRW, it's all the president's lawyers. What a day for it, especially with today's testimony by Ambassador Gordon Sondland. We're going to have more on those impeachment hearings later today as well on KCRW and All Things Considered. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ear and for your time on this Wednesday. Have a great day.